Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to the show. This is the DL Link Show on 101.9 Hi FM. I'm Nikki Seberini. And there's a little reminder. So the weather in Joburg, I think if you are training for the Jerusalem Marathon, you've got to be pretty committed to be out there on the roads in the ongoing rain. And if you are, well done and good for you and keep going. And I suppose you have to be doing it because it's happening on the 4th of April. And you know that Team DL Link will be going along to Israel, running through the magnificent streets of Jerusalem and really making a difference. Because it is a chance when you join the team to uplift lives and to bring hope to those who need it most. Now, time is running out. Flights are extremely limited. Spots are filling fast. So if you want to be a part of this pretty extraordinary event, go along to the website, www.dllink.co.za. Be a part of this truly life-changing experience. And also, if you're not going, but you want to acquaint yourself with some of the runners and see who you'd maybe like to support, see why they're running, what their journey is all about, you can find that all on the website. The Jerusalem Marathon, it's about running with purpose, and it's about changing lives. Together, we go the distance, and we support our warriors. So I was talking about this phenomenal evening, a night full of stars, and what was acknowledged were the warriors who have passed, those who so bravely went on the journey and who are no longer with us. But mostly it was a celebration about life and about those who are here and those who have overcome the odds, and with losses, and there they are dancing and celebrating. And then we move a little bit further into the world around us, which, as I said, can seem like a pretty dark place. And I would say that a word that seems to be used a lot recently, besides Gabor Maté really using it and talking about it, is the word trauma. And I think that we are all experiencing varying degrees of trauma in our own personal space, but also in what is happening in the world around us. And perhaps it's difficult to think, well, is it trauma? Isn't trauma just something huge and horrific that happens to people in their lives? You know, maybe I haven't had something huge and horrific, but it certainly feels bad within my body. Is this trauma? Isn't it trauma? Well, we're going to be unpacking it with Darren Williams, who has been doing incredible work. He says he's an aspiring psychologist. He has a passion for story. And he is doing his part-time honors at WITS. He completed a master's degree in global mental health at King's College, and he has done wonderful things with SADAG, providing support, face-to-face trauma support to people. So Darren's joining us today, and we're going to be unpacking this word trauma, what it means, and all the different aspects of it. So Darren, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Nikki. It's a pleasure to be here. And thanks for talking about this important topic.
Yeah, I think it really is important. And I want to start off with the definition of trauma, because, you know, it is, you know, a lot of people are using the word, and I am always afraid when a word is overused, because then it loses its gravitas and its true meaning. And I think that there's an importance to that when one wants to heal. You know, it's not something we should just throw around. Or maybe I'm wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong. So what is trauma?
So I like the definition that Gabor Maté uses in his book, The Myth of Normal. And he talks of trauma as an inner injury, a lasting rupture or split within the self due to difficult and hurtful events. And what's important to take from that is that trauma is not what happened to you, but what happens inside of you. And often it's lodged in the nervous system, the mind, and the body. And it lasts long beyond the original incident that might have triggered it. And those are the key qualities of it. So it's this inner fragmenting of self, and it shows up in a constellation of hardships, because it's not only the injury, the event that might have happened, but it comes with associated unresolved emotion, the coping dynamics we develop, the neurotic scripts we live out, and the physical toll that it takes on us.
Okay, so it's not the event. It's what's happened inside of us.
Yes.
So something can happen, and you're saying it's stored in the nervous system, in the mind, in the body, and so trauma is a feeling. Is trauma a feeling?
I think a better way to say is that trauma is a way of being,
A
because
way of being.
it impresses itself on us in ways that sometimes we don't have control over. And so let me make this distinction, which is often made, that we talk about two types of trauma. You get what they call capital T trauma and little t trauma. And capital T trauma is what we're used to. It's the exposure to big singular events that might be the loss of a loved one, a cancer diagnosis, emotional abuse, poverty, racism. And those are those automatic responses and mind-body adaptations to those specific events. And what's important there is that it's automatic, right? So it becomes a way of being. Where small t trauma is the less memorable but hurtful and far more prevalent misfortunes of childhood. And there we're talking about things like if you just lacked emotional connection with a caregiver, or there was a casual but a harsh comment from well-meaning parents that happened all too often, even that leaves scars. So the feeling state that we're in, the way that we think, the way that we engage in the world can all be part of a traumatic response based on our history and experiences.
Wow, a traumatic response. So, and again, correct me. So when you talk about the little t and the capital T, so the little t, and if you're saying that these are the things that could have happened to us when we were younger, so there could have been a big trauma when we were younger, or it could have been, as you say, just something that happened and our caregiver did something and maybe we interpreted it as something at the time. Kind of maybe felt traumatic. Those traumas, you're talking about those little traumas are impacting us now.
Yes, and so I think what's important is that I'm not advocating that everyone's necessarily traumatized, but it is important to think about how you're showing up in the world, what your worldview is, your view of self, what your physical health is like, and how that relates to perhaps what's happened to you or continues to happen to you in the moment, just so that you also realize that it's sometimes there's something that sits beneath the way that we engage with the world. And trauma, honestly, I believe that trauma is probably what sits at the heart of most mental illness. Whether you're diagnosed with depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, whatever it might be, those are different manifestations or reactions to traumatic encounters.
So let's talk about you mentioned a cancer diagnosis, for example. So I don't know if you heard, I mean the DL Link had such an extraordinary event last night. We get to speak to all sorts of cancer warriors. So I sometimes have adults who have been diagnosed, right? And they talk about resilience and they talk about surrendering, like our previous guest, and the journey that they've gone on. And then we have little children who are diagnosed with cancer. And two of those little children were on the show last night. Darren, they were on stage, they were singing, they were dancing, they were amazing, they were magnificent. So now we're looking at a trauma in a child that they have faced, being the cancer, diagnosis and their journey and overcoming it. And then you can have an adult who's being diagnosed with a cancer, and maybe it's triggering a kind of like a previous trauma. And how would you speak to that in terms of healing? So when I look at Hannah and Charisse on stage last night, I just see these beautiful individuated souls who I've overcome so much, who are so incredibly resilient, who probably have such inner resources that some of us don't have, through a lifetime of whatever. And I wonder if that kind of a trauma at that age, if you're well supported, you are able to move through the trauma, which is why you then have the confidence to go on stage and sing and dance and be so amazing.
Certainly. So you're touching on healing already. And I think one other thing that I do want to touch on just before we get there is the consequences of trauma. So what does trauma do to us? And there are a couple of things. One of them is that it separates us from our bodies, and we disconnect from the feeling states that we associate with suffering. And so what do I mean by that? I mean, if somebody's gone through a trauma like cancer diagnosis, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of suffering. As a child, potentially, you disconnect from those feelings, right? Because that's the only way you know how to cope with it. So it can lead to that kind of separation from the body. It also splits us all from our gut feelings, because a lot of trauma relates to a fight or flight response. You know, when you're feeling threatened, you want to either attack or run away. But often, sometimes we need to freeze because no other option exists. And that is the energy that kind of gets stored in our nervous system. A traumatized nervous system never gets to unfreeze. But if we can't fight or run away, then we also have to suppress those natural instincts that tell us that there's a threat, we need to fight or run away. And that means that we're disconnected from our feeling world. The third thing that trauma does is that it limits how we can respond, the response flexibility, because often our, especially with developmental trauma or childhood trauma, our world around us will view our perceptions of the world. It shapes our worldview. And that affects how we respond. And so as you spoke about triggers, that something might happen and you automatically, reflexively react in a certain way. And that's the way in which it limits your response flexibility. And really importantly, it fosters a shame-based view of self. I really struggle with that. Most people who have trauma often struggle with a sense of I'm not enough. And have a negative self-perception and a loss of compassion. But also it alienates us from the present. You know, the way that we're so busy and distracted and always trying to find the next thing to do, the next event to go to, is often sometimes us trying to escape from ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's important to think about those consequences of trauma then before we go into sort of what healing is like. So the image I've created is the sense that trauma is a disconnect from self. And healing is then about moving towards a sense of wholeness. How do you make yourself whole again and reconnect with yourself? And it's important to remember that healing is a direction. You know, it's not a destination. We're so outcomes focused in today's world that we don't really want to celebrate incremental progress. But you need to be process focused here. And so if you'd like, I can give a bit of discussion on sort of what healing might entail.
Yeah, because you're talking about, you know, disconnecting from self. So, I mean, I'm thinking, how does one connect reconnect with oneself? You're talking about trauma in the body, but does a community have anything to do with it? So please go ahead.
So let me say, healing from trauma really, I think, requires a sense of safety. You need, if you're constantly feeling threatened, you can't begin the work of healing. Yeah, and that is often where I talk about co-regulation and the spaces where support, community support, important relations in relationships come into play. Because if you don't have that sense of safety, I think healing can't begin. And then it starts with just acknowledging what happened to you. And acknowledgement is not resignation, but just saying, you know, this thing happened to me. I went through this. And learning to cultivate compassion, reconnecting with the body. And those are the two important things. I mean, in my own journey, I struggle with depression. And I found that reconnecting with the body is an important one. Because as I alluded to earlier, sometimes we shut down the signals that our body are giving us. Because in the past, that was all we could do to cope with it. A lot of what trauma is maladaptive coping strategies. They were coping strategies at a time and they worked for us then. And later on in life, they don't serve us anymore. And so reconnecting with the body is things like doing yoga. Even if you go to a gym or you're on a run, be present in what's going on in your body, because that connection means that you can then, you get a feeling sense of what's going on in your body. And that's important because then you're alive to the signals that your body's giving you. But it's also about compassion. I know I'm really impatient myself. I feel like I've been on this road for years. I've been struggling for years. Progress seems painfully slow. But the things that people have gone through are big. And so healing takes time. We need to acknowledge that. And I think one of the hardest shifts I've had to try and make is to see disease as a teacher. So depression as not something to scoff at or feel bad about, but ask myself, if I'm feeling in a depressed state today, what is that trying to tell me? And that is the paradigm shift of disease as an event to disease as a teacher, a process through which you can learn?
You know, Darren, it's amazing because everything, I mean, what you've spoken about and what you've shared, and I love that, with feeling space and feeling safe and feeling connected and acknowledging that something happened, being compassionate with self, becoming more embodied. So the connection, the mind-body connection is there, feeling into the body and. You know, again, just moving back to with our cancer warriors, how so often instinctively, as part of their healing journey, they do this. Instinctively, there is this joining community, connecting with others, which creates a safe space. There is a lot of them will then take on some kind of running or doing things after, you know, even part of the healing or post-healing, they now start doing something like that. Then they do something beyond themselves. They create something amazing. I mean, our previous guest was talking about that. And it's almost as if there is this, and finding meaning in the suffering. You spoke about your depression. They, you know, people who are very conscious on this cancer journey are looking for what have I learned? How have I grown? And then very importantly, how can I give back? And it's so amazing to me how many people innately, go, not everyone, certainly not everyone, Darren, because people need the support and someone to help and guide, or groups of people to help and guide. But do you find that there is, if you give yourself time and space, that there is this innate healing which can take place? Perhaps if we don't get stuck in the narrative of what happened to us, if we're not stuck there, but we move on with the feeling and the forgiving and the compassion, that we have this innate ability to heal.
Definitely, I think we do. Around cancer, there's an interesting study that was done that showed that patients who took ownership and agency in their healing often had better outcomes than patients who were just sort of compliant. You know, so the idea of a good patient is the one who just listens to the doctor. But the patient who actually came with the research, asked the questions, what one might consider the annoying patient, often had better healing outcomes. And that speaks to the fact that you're taking ownership, you're taking agency. And I loved when you spoke about Hannah and how she sat there and imagined a different world. She reclaimed a narrative and she took ownership and agency of the healing process. And studies have shown that helps a lot. Another interesting tidbit around cancer is that in 87, a psychologist, Lydia Temeshop, did a study and she defined something called type C personality. So what she recognized was that a lot of people who had a strong association with malignancy onset had personality qualities that we would often say are good. They were cooperative and appeasing. They were assertive. They were patient. They were always showing up for other people. And she found that quite strange. But what she realized is that often that was the case because people were either suppressing or repressing their needs. Mm. They were showing up in a way that they expected the world to have them show up so that they can be liked, so that they can belong. And that ties to, I think, one of the most important messages from Gabor Mate's book is the idea that a lot of trauma is a tension between two of our core needs, the need for attachment and the need for authenticity. We are wired to want to feel close, emotional closeness and physical closeness to a person, but we also want to be true to ourselves and true to the gut feelings and instincts. And sometimes those two non-negotiable needs are pitted against each other. If you're a child in a home where you're neglected, or you show that you're hungry and you're scolded, then there's a tension between attachment and authenticity. And so often that's why a lot of trauma, or where a lot of trauma stems from, that tension. And part of it is reclaiming your authenticity, reclaiming your agency, and like you say, retelling your narrative. Because a lot of developmental trauma, the long chronic stuff, the abuse or the neglect, result in negative self-perceptions, shame-based views, and it takes quite a bit of work to change your narrative, right? To think differently about yourself, to get to the point where you can actually develop what I would call metacognition. Start thinking about what you're thinking about rather than just reacting and responding. Ask yourself in that moment, am I suppressing a feeling, or Did I want to say something else, but I didn't? Why didn't I? So the, and that's why mindfulness and meditation are often spoken about, because it develops that faculty of metacognition, of being able to observe without reaction and being curious about what's going on in your brain. I think we stay stuck because we're often reacting.
Amazing. Amazing. Listen, I love this conversation. I'm sorry that it's so short, but certainly for people, I know that you offered this SADAG, this kind of support group for people who are suffering with trauma. And just by the way, I do want to add, you spoke about mindfulness, and I think an amazing way of healing and the embodiment is breath work as well. It's perhaps something that you should investigate with your group. It's phenomenally healing. But very quickly, before we do say goodbye, Darren, if people want to get hold of you, join your group, talk about trauma, unpack, but have support, how can they get hold of you?
So you can WhatsApp me on 069-631-0953. The support group will meet once a month on a Tuesday in Morningside at the Ernest Ullman Recreation Center. And really, it's a space for you to feel connected. It's a confidential, non-judgmental space where you can be validated. We empathize, you learn coping strategies, and really reclaim your power, because trauma keeps us stuck in the past. And when we begin our healing journey, we realize that we don't need to be stuck in the past and that there can be a better tomorrow.
Amazing, Darren. Thank you for joining us. Absolutely wonderful discussion. Thank you. Darren Williams on 1.9 Chai FM.